Wednesday, April 5th, you are listening to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman.
And I am Cherry Gregg. Coming up later in the hour, we're talking about ChatGPT and other artificial intelligence systems. You've probably seen them in the headlines.
Yes.
You may have gotten a little bit nervous. I know I did.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about what it really means for all of us. We have a tech reporter we're going to chat with, and we want to know what you think. Are you worried or are you excited about these chatbots? You could call us and weigh in at 888-477-9499, or you can email studio2@whyy.org.
And this morning, Cherry, I was listening to the usual stuff I always listen to on Spotify, and I realized the playlist is getting stale. Luckily, we are going to sit back later in the hour and sample some new tunes by Philly-based artists.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Always fun. Now we got to dig into our news roundup.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So two Delaware shell companies are at the center of the Trump indictment. That's according to Delaware Online. You probably heard this. The indictment for former President Donald Trump is based on alleged payoffs meant to keep the lid on his affair with porn star Stormy Daniels. You probably heard that.
Yep.
But right before the 2016 general election, former Trump attorney Michael Cohen, he created two companies in Delaware. They're called, one was Essential Consultants LLC, and the other one was called Resolution Consultants LLC.
Not a good day for consultants.
Yeah, not for consultants. And according to Delaware Online, one company was used to pay Daniels directly, and the other was used to pay the National Enquirer, a tabloid, which did a catch and kill on two other story. So Delaware is always in the mix somewhere.
Whenever funny money is involved, Delaware is there somehow. We should be clear, it's not exactly apparent why Cohen decided to host these companies in Delaware. That wasn't revealed in the indictment. We did know about the presence of these companies and their role in this for a while, but it's just sort of coming back to the surface as the indictment takes all of our attention. And like we said before, lots of people incorporate in Delaware because of favorable business laws and the ease and sometimes the lack of transparency about who is connected to the incorporated companies. And this is indeed the latest example.
Exactly. So let's go over to Jersey.
Yeah, let's go to Jersey
what you got
now.
From there.
So earlier this week, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy signed an executive order declaring the state a safe haven for transgender and non-binary people. This, again, is an executive order. It's not legislation. The upshot is that Murphy is directing state agencies to protect people receiving and, crucially, providing gender-affirming health care. Also asking law enforcement to not cooperate with other states' investigations into whether or not someone has got this kind of care in New Jersey. So we've, of course, seen the headlines from places like Florida and Kansas, lawmakers and governors trying to block or outlaw gender-affirming care define someone's gender at birth so you can never change that. And New Jersey is going the other direction and saying, hey, if you are looking for that type of care, you can come to New Jersey safely.
Yeah. And this is kind of reminiscent of sanctuary cities and sanctuary states where you protect undocumented immigrants and others, and you don't necessarily cooperate with other authorities. And so New Jersey is sort of taking a clue from that in this case. So we're going to come back. We're going to come over to Philly now.
Okay.
And let's talk about high-speed roadways. Speeders on Roosevelt Boulevard. Apparently, Avi, they've been evading speed enforcement cameras by hiding their license plates.
My.
Yeah.
That hadn't occurred to me.
Hadn't occurred to me either. I mean, the Philadelphia Parking Authority revealed new information to the state legislature recently about the speed camera program on the boulevard. It's a notoriously dangerous road in the city. I mean, people drive up to 100 miles per hour. If you're on foot, it's not just dangerous, but it's also possibly deadly. And there are required annual report for this year. PPA said over 30,000 cars, trucks, and other vehicles were not ticketed, even if they were way over the speed limit. It's because they've been hiding their license plates and using a number of methods to do that.
30,000. That's a big number.
Yeah. And that's money that's not coming to the city.
Absolutely. Yeah. We should point out that this is all part of a broader effort to make this notoriously dangerous road safer in Northeast Philadelphia. And there is evidence that overall it is working because crashes are down significantly on the boulevard since this pilot program began. And so while there are clearly loopholes, and we can discuss ways about closing those loopholes, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there has been some proven effectiveness here for a road that has vexed planners and harmed residents for a long, long time.
Yeah, but they have to take another step. This is just a pilot program. It's important to prove that effectiveness so that they can get legislation to make this a permanent change. Yeah.
And finally, in our news roundup, I'll ask you, Cherry, you a gardener? Are you a plant person?
I have one plant that's alive, that I kept alive. I'm like very happy about this.
You're the plant champion, a certified green thumb. So our producer, Paige, brought us this story very excitedly from researchers at Tel Aviv University. They wanted to figure out exactly how plants sound. We're a sound-based show. Ooh. We're a radio show, so yeah. We were intrigued.
I want to know.
They used ultrasonic microphones on tomato plants, tobacco plants, other plants, to basically try to find out how plants sound in certain types of conditions. So, for instance, if they're cut or if they're dehydrated or perhaps they're overhydrated. Oh. And they did indeed find that plants make a lot of sounds. For instance, this is a grapevine's reaction to being cut. What are you making of that?
It sounds like aliens. You know, like, I don't know, like a SOS. I don't know what
that is.
We're
into artificial intelligence later, Cherry. Yeah, it's interesting. It does sound like it's in distress. And what was interesting is that the sounds weren't random. Like, they did correlate with certain types of conditions. And it did make me, as soon as Paige brought this to me, I did want to call my wife and say, hey, did we water our plants this weekend? I started to feel the moral burden to keep the plants healthy.
Well, I talked to mine, so I'm going to keep doing that because I must be doing something right. Wonderful. So next we are joined by WHYY health and science reporter Nicole Leonard. Nicole's been reporting on an important deadline. During the pandemic, a federal rule prohibited states from terminating a resident's Medicaid or CHIP coverage. Now that rule has been phased out, which means everyone needs to reapply or they risk losing their health care. Nicole Leonard, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start here, Nicole. Why is this federal rule sunsetting?
Well, there's a couple reasons, and Cherry, you just mentioned that there were some things that happened early on in the pandemic, right? That back in 2020, you know, this big public health crisis was happening globally, and this special rule was put into place because people foresaw that, you know, folks really needed health coverage during this time, especially if they got COVID-19 or to deal with other medical illnesses or situation during the public health emergency. It would have been really complicated for people to go through this renewal process while they were dealing with a lot of pandemic issues, right? But as the pandemic has wind down, and don't get me wrong, there are still COVID-19 cases happening and infections still happening. But while this winds down, this special rule was always meant to be temporary. And so as of April 1st, it has officially expired.
So explain to us what used to happen during the pandemic that's not going to happen now, and then what do people have to do to make sure that they don't lose their health care?
Well, the special rule made it so that people, you know, before the pandemic, people on an annual basis had to turn in income information and household information to whichever state agency, wherever they lived. And when they did that, they would be reevaluated for the program. And so during the pandemic, they no longer really had to do this. It wasn't a requirement for them to keep their Medicaid coverage. So even if some states still asked for this information, like in Pennsylvania, if people didn't turn in their, you know, new income levels or anything like that, they weren't terminated from coverage. They could still keep Medicaid coverage. But now that the special rule is sunsetting and that it has officially expired, people will have to go through this renewal process again. And if they don't complete it, they could lose their health coverage entirely.
So what does the renewal process entail? How does one do it? I really want to step-by-step this thing, Nicole, because we know we have listeners who are going to have to do this, or they know someone who's going to have to go through this process. So take us through it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, Avi, because this can be a complicated process. The actual application involves a lot of paperwork. Some people have, you know, different circumstances with their family or a complex income situation. So the actual application could be complicated and it takes time. And that's why people may start to feel anxiety or worry about filling it out. But there are things people can do in advance in anticipation of having to complete a renewal application to the state. And the first thing that they want to do, whether you live in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, you want to have your mailing address and contact information, like your email or your phone number, you want to have it updated with the state. And that's really important because the state is going to send most of these renewal applications and notifications and information to the addresses and information you have on file. So if you've moved during the pandemic, you really want to make sure that that is updated. And then the other things that you can do is, you know, you can start to get your paperwork in order. If you already know that you're not going to be eligible for Medicaid anymore because your income has grown significantly, you may want to look at other places that offer health insurance. And those include the Affordable Care Act marketplaces that exist in all the states and at the federal government level. And those have options where you would have to pay in for them. So it's different than Medicaid, but there are options out there for people.
Yeah, because you do not want to be without health care. And so I want you, are there deadlines? Because in case someone doesn't get it, should they be checking on deadlines? And I wanted to also ask you, I mean, we've heard, you know, of labor shortages and all sorts of things dealing with the government. And we saw this happen during the pandemic. Should people stay, how should they stay diligent to make sure that their health care remains intact?
Yeah, I mean, as far as deadline goes, you know, after April 1st, every state is sort of doing it differently. So that's what makes it even more complicated, right? But I could say, you know, for example, in Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania is going to send out notifications and information to people 90 days before their renewal date. Their final submission is due. And that's going to be different for everybody. Mm. So 90 days before that, you should start getting information and notifications. And then 30 days before your renewal application is actually due, you're supposed to get that renewal application in the mail so that you can start looking at it, filling it out. You can do this online too. And if you do it online, you actually can fill it out 60 days prior to your submission due date. And so those are really good ways of, you know, figuring out what you might be able to plan for timeline wise. You can go online in Pennsylvania at least and see when your renewal date is going to be. So you can circle that on the calendar. And it might not be something that happens until, you know, it might happen next month. It might happen in the fall or December. So it could be a while away.
And that is WHYY health and science reporter Nicole Leonard. Up next, ChatGPT and the AI revolution. Talking with Washington Post tech reporter Will Oremus right here on Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You are listening to Studio 2. Good afternoon, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Reminder, alert. Our phone lines are open right now, 888-477-9499. You can also email us, studio2@whyy.org, and we have a rich topic today.
Yeah, and that topic ChatGPT, Bing, Bard. Over the last 4 months, we've heard a lot about these artificial intelligence language systems. They've been composing student essays, writing poetry, drafting bills in Congress, but they've been also creating frighteningly realistic images of Donald Trump or even the Pope. And we've also heard about how they could pose a threat to our jobs and our education system.
Speaking of threats, just yesterday, President Biden met with his top science and tech advisors to discuss, this is in quotes here, the risks and opportunities that AI presents. And of course, a lot of people heard about this last week. A bunch of AI experts and ethicists and executives, including a guy named Elon Musk, released a letter calling for a pause in AI development, saying these systems present, quote, profound risks to society and humanity. That does not sound very cheery.
No. So how worried should we be? Or is this just a panic over the unknown? We've asked Washington Post technology reporter Will Oremus to come in and help us get a handle on ChatGPT and other AI chatbots. And we want to figure out how they're used. Will, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me on.
So we got to just get some basic understanding. What is ChatGPT, Bing Bard, these chatbots, and how do they work?
So for many years, big tech companies like Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, along with some startups like OpenAI, which is based in San Francisco, have been developing what are called large language models. These are huge systems, computer systems that are trained on data from all across the internet. Just vast pools of stuff that's been published online, whether it's on Reddit or the New York Times or Wikipedia. And they're trained to identify patterns in language so they can tell which words tend to go together, which concepts tend to appear in the same paragraph or in the same article. And so now they've begun releasing these as chatbots that you can interact with. And so you can ask a chatbot like ChatGPT, that's the one that's made by OpenAI, you can ask it just about anything, and it will give you a very plausible sounding response in perfectly grammatical language. And often it is correct, but not always.
So you talked about how these have just been released. And just as a layperson and observer, one of the things that's really taken me aback is the speed with which these have seemingly come on the scene, because we've been hearing about AI and, including sort of AI that does this type of stuff for a long time. And then suddenly it felt like there were these user-facing interfaces that we could use almost often at no charge. So why did these come on the scene now? Is it because the tech is finally ready, or is there something else going on behind the scenes that explains this?
That's exactly right. I mean, if you haven't been following closely, and no reason that most people should, it can seem like these things came out of nowhere. 6 months ago, ChatGPT didn't exist. Bing and Bard didn't exist. And most people were unaware that there was anything like this kind of technology in development. That's because it was being done behind closed doors in research labs by people that companies like Google hired from academia. These are top computer scientists from around the world going to work at these tech companies, building these models, but they were reluctant to release them to the public because they knew that they were flawed in many ways. These chatbots, when they give an output, it will reflect any biases that are in its training data. So sometimes it can give answers that are racist or sexist. Sometimes it can give answers, as we've alluded to, that are false, that seem true but turn out not to be true. And they also can seem so human-like at times, just because they're so well-trained to interact in human-like ways, that they can fool people into thinking that they're almost human or that they're dealing with a form of alien intelligence. There was a Google researcher who was working on these language models last year named Blake Lemoine, who came to believe that the chatbot that he was developing was real, had a mind, was deserving of rights. He formed a relationship with this chatbot. And if that could happen to a Google researcher who understands the technology, you can imagine how many sort of ordinary people could end up thinking that these things are real. So out of those sorts of safety and ethics considerations, the big tech companies were not releasing them to the public. But then OpenAI came along, the startup, and they figured that actually the best way to address the flaws in this technology was to open it up to the public, to let people play with it, find the flaws, and then they could get to work on trying to fix them.
And so I want to dig into these flaws a little bit more, because I mean, I got a chance to go on ChatGPT and play with it a bit.
And actually, it's fun.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, I was actually surprised at how much fun it was. But I mean, you know, talk about these flaws, because what is the range of things that a ChatGPT, for example, can do? I mean, I asked it to do a rap, an advertisement for Studio 2. It was pretty cool. But then there's a lot of things on the other side that could be a lot darker or scarier.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're talking about both the real. I mean, there's like a real, almost magical. And AI critics hate it when we say something like magical. It's not magic. It's technology. It's software. But it can feel almost magical. It can feel dazzling when you ask it something that you know no technology we've ever used would be able to answer. And suddenly, this chatbot spits out an incredible answer. I mean, teachers can use it to say, come up with a sample lesson plan for a class of fifth graders about the Peloponnesian War. And it'll come up with a lesson plan that's not just basic, but like engaging and includes interactive activities. It just can do so many things seemingly so well, and therein lies part of the risk, because their language is flawless, the grammar is perfect, most of the facts are usually right, but there's no guarantee that the facts will be right, because what it's really doing behind the scenes is it's just putting together words that usually go together. It's like, it's a word association game based on the most vast data set you can imagine. And so, most often when it puts together a bunch of words that go together on articles all across the internet, that happens to be true. But sometimes it's not. And in fact, there are cases when it confidently makes assertions that are just completely fabricated or made up.
Can you give us an example, Will?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to give your listeners a little preview. We'll have an article out from the Washington Post shortly about an incident where a law professor was using ChatGPT and saying, I don't remember the exact prompt, but it was something like, is sexual harassment a problem in law schools across the country? And if so, can you give me five examples and cite specific sources of sexual harassment scandals that really happened? It generated, this was the GPT-4 model with the ChatGPT interface. It generated five examples of sexual harassment scandals across the country. It named the law schools. It named the professors. It even cited news articles to back up each one. And a couple of them turned out not to be true, just made up. The news articles didn't exist. The incidents described never happened, but they were real people that it was naming.
We are talking with Washington Post tech reporter Will Oremus about ChatGPT, Bing, Bard, and other artificial intelligence systems that we've all been testing out a lot over the last few months. We want to hear from you. Perhaps you have tested out these ChatGPT-like systems, and you want to tell us about your experience. Maybe you fear this stuff. Maybe you're really looking forward to seeing more of it. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Of course, one of the fears, Will, is that these types of systems will be used to displace people who work in certain industries. Which industries are most at threat in the near term when we're talking about this type of tech?
Yeah, and a lot of this is going to be speculative, because people are still finding out what actually works and what doesn't. There's going to be a lot of trial and there's going to be a lot of error. Companies are going to try laying off their humans and replacing them with AI, and it's going to fail spectacularly, and some of them will go under or get sued probably, and then others will try it and find that it works great for certain tasks. So there was a report that came out last week from the bank Goldman Sachs that researched and tried to just game out what are the industries that have the most tasks that could be automated by existing technology. And they said that the sectors they identified were legal professions and then office and administrative jobs. And within the legal profession, it said that something like issuing a complicated ruling on a court case is not something that is amenable to being automated today, but maybe summarizing legal documents or identifying the proper statutes to refer to, the kind of work that paralegals do today, could be automated, because there that you can tell it to draw on specific data sets that pretty much only contain factual information. There's less of a chance of errors.
Yeah, I want to jump in here because I teach a class at Temple University, mm-hmm. and I am a little concerned mm-hmm. about my students. And so we have an email from Rick who sort of, you know, is amplifying my question in a way. He says, how are teachers supposed to monitor if students are using it? And is there a way to check if something is AI generated? And then this is a worry I think a lot of people have. Will kids then not know how to write?
Yeah.
Will they start, you know, using ChatGPT as a shortcut?
Yeah, absolutely. Kids across the country are definitely using ChatGPT as a shortcut. They're using it to compose their essays. Maybe in a more responsible case, maybe they're using it to brainstorm ideas for their essay or something like that, or to help track down sources. You know, parts of this issue are new, and parts of it are familiar, right? I mean, when Wikipedia came out, there was panic among educators anybody with an internet connection, any student with an internet connection, would now just start cribbing this unreliable crowdsourced material. It's easy to forget because Wikipedia has developed mechanisms that make it a surprisingly reliable source in many cases. It's easy to forget that when it first came out, I mean, people were terrified about misinformation from Wikipedia. Like, what guarantee was there that a bunch of random people being able to edit this online encyclopedia would actually get it right? And, you know, we now know that Wikipedia isn't a perfect source, but you can use it as a really good guide to research, and it can give you basic information. You know, maybe these chatbots are headed in that direction. But in the meantime, as far as detection, it is a thorny problem, because over the years, there has been technology evolved to detect plagiarism by students. There are companies like Turnitin, where a teacher can run a student's essay through the software, and it will search through its huge database and see if the wording there is an exact or almost an exact match for something that's already been written, and it can say, hey, that's probably plagiarism. They are working on tools that can do that to see if text is generated by AI, but the issue is that when ChatGPT spits out an essay, it is not going to be identical in its wording to anything that's ever been published before, and so it's a much harder problem, and they're not very good yet at identifying it.
And we are speaking to Will Oremus, technology reporter for the Washington Post. We would love to hear from you. Are you excited or are you afraid of this new technology? You can call us at 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. I have a quick follow-up. I wanted to zoom out a bit, and I told me and Avi where we're talking about this. You know, we've seen these viral photos, these AI-generated photos. One was of the Pope dressed in like a puffy coat. It was a really cool looking one, by the way.
Yeah, it did
designer.
Look great.
It looked great. And then there was also one of former President Donald Trump in handcuffs. And then it comes to find out both of those were AI generated. I mean, you know, talk about the future of these. A lot of folks have been uploading their photographs to apps like Lensa, sharing their pictures. I mean, should we be concerned? We work in news, and we're seeing these AI photos, and it's really hard to detect whether or not they're real or fake.
Yeah. So we've been talking mostly about the chatbots that generate text on almost any subject, but there are these image generators where you type in the text, and then it creates either a very artistic or sometimes very photorealistic image according to your prompt. And some of these are going viral, and I think this is a new vector for people who want to spread misinformation. I mean, it was one thing when you could make up a conspiracy theory or fake news and write it. Now you can also illustrate it and make it look like it really happened. And we know that pictures have a stronger psychological impact on people than words. I mean, we have phrases in our lexicon like, you know, the pictures to prove it, or more, the more recent online version, pics or it didn't happen. Well, now it could be pics and it didn't happen. Absolutely, there's going to be a new type of digital literacy that people develop when they where they have a skepticism of images that they see and don't automatically believe that they correspond to reality. There are also calls for technology maybe that builds in a watermark to any image that's generated by AI so that you can tell it was AI generated. Then, of course, there's going to be other technology that can remove the watermark. So, yes, a new class, not entirely novel, but a new form of these issues of people being able to trick other people online.
Cat and mouse. Will, help me understand something. A lot of this stuff is either free to use or cheap to use. There are nonprofits in this space, but I'm not naive. I assume long term there is a profit play here. What is the business model for this type of tech?
A great question. And I'm glad you said free to use. So ChatGPT is indeed free to use. Microsoft's Bing is free to use. And in fact, if you use Microsoft products, you've probably seen it. It's popping up everywhere. It's in Skype. It's in Microsoft Office. They want you to use it, right? They're putting it in your face saying, hey, use it. Google's Bard is still in an experimental mode, but I assume that will be free when it's released. They're not free to run. They're actually incredibly expensive to train these models in the first place. Just the sheer amount of processing power. There are only a handful of companies in the world that can build the cutting edge language models from scratch and train them. And then each query that you run actually uses a significant amount of processing power as well. So there is an energy cost, there's a cost to the server space, there's an environmental cost. So yes, eventually they're going to have to start recouping these costs and more. Exactly how they'll do that, we do not know for sure, but we can see some hints. So Bing, when it gives search results to certain queries, it has started testing, putting sponsored results there. So it'll put a link to a site that advertises with Microsoft as part of the response. And ideally, we can hope that responsible tech companies will clearly disclose when that is the case, when their chatbots are shilling for a corporate partner. Realistically, especially as chatbots proliferate and the models get cheaper, there will be all kinds of shadier ways of trying to monetize these products as well.
Since we're talking money, let's talk about intellectual property here, because there's a lot of talk online, especially among artists, because this AI will use some of their images and maybe change it. Writers, they'll use their style of writing and some of their ideas and shuffle it up and scramble it up. Will these artists, will these writers, I mean, all of this comes from human creativity and ingenuity. Will they get paid at some point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we can look for a parallel in the history of social media when, companies offered these online platforms and encouraged us all to start sharing information about ourselves and posting photos of ourselves and posting content and all that kind of thing. And then, eventually it turns out that we've all been the free labor for these multi-billion dollar companies. And not only that, but all that stuff that we shared, to use their parlance, that we shared with Facebook and whoever else, a lot of it has turned out to be scraped by other companies. There's a company called Clearview AI that went in and scraped pictures of people's faces and matched them to names to build a gigantic face recognition database. So not only did we do Facebook's work for free, but we also helped, help the police surveil us for free. And so I think, there are probably parallels. I think that the companies don't have to pay people to scrape their data or to, create images in the style of a given artist or text in the style of a given writer, they probably won't. And so it comes into, questions of intellectual property and liability. And I assume those will be worked out by some combination of the court system and regulators. There are already a few court cases in progress. So Getty Images is a company that does pay artists and photographers to upload images that it then licenses for use on websites and news media and such. They are suing one of the AI companies, Stable Diffusion, for allegedly scraping those images in order to train its own AI art without Getty's consent or permission and without paying anybody involved.
Just a minute left, Will, but I did not want to end this conversation without talking about some of the potential benefits of ChatGPT, which you've written about, people who struggle with language, perhaps children who need extra tutoring. What quickly are some of the potential near-term benefits of this tech?
I think it can be a wonderful brainstorming tool. You know, when you use a search engine, you're often searching for correct and factual and authoritative information. I would caution people against using ChatGPT in that way. It's just not what it's good at. However, you can ask it like these sort of bespoke, personalized questions that you could never ask a search engine, and it will bring together information from all different articles and really give you a nice head start on, like, I used it recently, like, what are some ideas for an 8-year-old boy's birthday party? I mentioned the teachers, you know, brainstorming a lesson plan. You can use it for fun, as you've alluded to, you know, have it play the role of your favorite celebrity and talk to you in the voice of that celebrity. There are all kinds of really fun uses, as long as you understand that what it's doing is matching patterns in language or patterns in images, and it's not a human mind, and it's not necessarily telling you things that are true.
We'll leave it there. That's Will Oremus, tech reporter at the Washington Post. Will, thank you so much for joining us today on Studio 2.
Enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot.
Next up, we're talking music. Big left turn.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
New music coming up.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Okay, we did all the ChatGPT AI, the scary future. Now we're going to talk about the fun present with a little music to end the hour.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this segment because, you know, we're in Philly, and Philadelphia is the home, the brewing and the launch pad to so, so many stars, you know, like from Hall & Oates to Patti LaBelle, Jill Scott, The Roots. I could just go on and on and on. And not to mention the number of musicians that come from Philadelphia. Almost every band has somebody from Philly.
And so we want to know who's next.
Yes.
So we talked with Amir Richardson, who, by the way, works here at WHYY as a community conversations convener, the big triple C. Mm-hmm. He also happens to be a rapper writer who goes by the name The Bull Bay. And I'm not just saying he's a rapper writer, like, he has a legit online following.
He's
a really talented rapper. So we asked Amir to bring us three songs from local artists that we should be listening to. And we said, Amir, we need someone who is in the loop to tell us what's going on.
So I'm adjacent to the loop, and I know a lot of the people that kind of like work and create in Philadelphia. I'm lucky enough to kind of create alongside them. So yeah, this is kind of like a sampling of what's happening in Philadelphia, but just a sampling. So much is going on.
Absolutely. You're adjacent to the loop. We're like looking at the loop from like a distant hilltop. So that's why we need you.
Yeah.
So we want to go over a few tracks, Amir, that really have caught your ear and your attention. So the first one I want to talk about is Lost by Adam Blackstone featuring John Scofield. Let's hear a little bit of that track.
Got lost in the music there.
Yeah. God, that does sort of sweep you away.
Yeah.
And Lost is a perfect title for that track because you do get a little lost and daisy in it.
100%. I love this song specifically because Adam Blackstone, you know, spearheaded it. He's a composer. He's a multi-hyphenate bass instrumentalist, and he's from Jersey and went to, Willenboro High School, and he's, you know, right from here and cut his teeth in the scene here in Philadelphia. And any major music performance that you've seen over the last 5 years, the Super Bowl, Oscars, Grammy, he was the music director.
That's wild.
You know, not only for those ceremonies, but also, you know, artists like Justin Timberlake, artists like Diddy. He's just, he's massive. He's major, and he was right here in Philadelphia cutting his teeth.
This is his track. This is his off of his album. But a lot of his career to this point has been sort of kind of in the background of these major artists.
Yeah, making everyone sound crisp, clean, lush, in order, and on time, and just sound like, you know, immaculate. And so this is his offering from his album called Legacy, the instrumental John. So it
has John in the title.
Yeah.
So you John's know it's from here. Okay.
Yeah. And it's packed with all the names that you know and love, and even some new names. You know, some of the names on there is DJ Jazzy Jeff, John Scofield, Kurt Franklin. It has range. It has range and it has depth. And so I really wanted to kind of throw that out there and highlight that because, you know, it is Philadelphia and it is also Jersey, the tri-state area. It's all of it.
And so the next song we're about to play is called PG, and the artist is Brayla.
For a pretty girl, she just came across my eyes. Sweetest thing in the whole world.
This is an artist who's emerged recently in Philadelphia by way of Dallas, and I really love that connection because it kind of like muddies up that relationship that we've all known to be like, you know, kind of tumultuous. And it really just fuses so many different sounds, and it kind of leads this new wave of vocalization and playing with your vocal cords. This is someone who is all across their social media just playing with phrases, and that's it, and creating these beautiful harmonies out of simple phrases. And so it's really, really interesting to listen to and to take in.
There's a lot going on there.
Isn't there? There's so many voices, and it's all her. And she's composing it, and a lot of times she does this stuff from her phone, which is just incredible that people can pick up these devices and create such beautiful, rich sound. And like I said, I feel like she's just redefining what soul and R&B sounds like coming from the city of Philadelphia. And again, on her social media accounts, you can see her create all these lush vocal tracks. And sometimes it's a simple phrase as hello or good morning. And she'll make good morning into a beautiful song. It just feels so good.
All right, so next I want to transition to a song that's by a pair of Philly guys, right?
Mm.
So this is Luke O'Brien and Matt Fell, and the song is called Keep Going. Let's take a listen.
Get back up from when we fall. If you can't walk, then crawl.
That makes me feel good.
Right? That's good, yeah.
And I think you wanted to bring this in because it's springtime, right? And like it's getting warmer, and you just need to feel that positive vibe sometimes.
Yeah, you know, we're coming out of those cold, dark, short days of fall and winter, and there's something to be said about easy listening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't require much of you. You could throw it on while you're cleaning or while you're driving or while you're just hanging out with some friends, and this song definitely qualifies. It's easy listening, and it feels good. From a magnet, then I turn around the next day. I'm aggro cragging like do 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 do. I do you have it? Mo for the results, and I snicker on the podium. Really miss the days when I would watch Nickelodeon. They show you dude love like an early Mick Foley.
I was trying to reflect a little bit on the lyrics, and it felt like a little bit familiar in the sense that I feel like maybe this has always been the case, but there is like a trope out there of people being young adults and maybe struggling a little bit with young adulthood and looking back on childhood days when things were simpler.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I'm an optimist. So I tell people to look forward, with optimism, but I can't deny that every day that we wake up, our world becomes a little bit more complex and a little bit more hard to navigate. And so having a song, again, that's like, you know, easy listening, it doesn't require much. It kind of gets you going and motivated and allows you to ease into whatever workflows you have. So this song is definitely up there for me.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So that's Amir Richardson. He's known as the hip-hop artist, The Bull Bay. And in the daytime here, WHYY is our Community Conversations convener. So check him out in that capacity as well. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
The other half is half gray. Depends on if I'm facing this way or that way, so that I can see the blueness. I want to see the trueness, but some days the wool is on my eyes and I'm clueless. My TV told me that these men should be wolves, so I try really hard to be strong and cool. I do bicep curls and lateral pulls. I take master classes.
Well, I have to say, that was a really cool way, to end today's show. That is going to get me through the rest of the day.
That's hump day content.
Hump day content. Seriously. So that's it for Studio 2. Thank you for all your questions or your comments via email. For more of our show, you can head over to whyy.org/studio2 and follow us on Twitter. We use the hashtag Studio 2.
Shouting out our producers, as always, Debbie Builder and Paige Marie Bessler. Our engineer is Diana Martinez. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.